David Crowe. Thanks for tuning in to episode 92 of my weekly radio show, The Infectious Myth. Email me at david.crowe@theinfectiousmyth.com. Like us or join the discussion at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. Follow us on Twitter at infectiousmyth. We're on iTunes and other podcast programs, so you can download us after our 2 p.m. Eastern Time broadcast on prn.fm. And remember, I don't know you're a listener until I hear from you. If you send me a message letting me know how you stay in touch with the show, and if you include your mailing address, I will send you a little thank you gift. If you'd like to sponsor the show as an individual or as an advertiser, please contact me. I appreciate all our listeners, especially those who write in, even if they just tell me that they're enjoying the show. But if you want this show to continue to grow and improve, consider paying a small amount for the information you're gleaning, for the support you get for some non-mainstream ideas, and the challenges you get to other of your ideas. I do really hope that sometimes you agree with me, and sometimes you don't. And if you don't, make sure you write to me or suggest a guest who will be a good challenge for me. Sam Milham is the author of the book Dirty Electricity, subtitled Electrification and the Diseases of Civilization. He started by studying chemistry and medicine in the 1950s. Over the years, he worked for the New York Department of Health, University of Hawaii, Albany Medical College, Washington State Public Health Association, Mount Sinai, and others. Sam believes that electrical fields cause the so-called diseases of civilization. I have to confess that I do have a conflict of interest because I've worked in the cell phone industry since 1984, so my listeners can take that into account with the discussion that follows. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Well, glad to be here.
Yeah, so what got you started believing that electromagnetic radiation and not other things were the cause of the so-called diseases of civilization?
I worked in the New York State Health Department. One of the things I did was try to exploit the medical information on the birth and death certificates, since they're population inclusive. Everybody who gets born after a certain date of pregnancy, like 20 weeks, gets a certificate for birth, and there's no way out of this life without a piece of paper being filed someplace.
You're not allowed to die unless you get the piece of paper, right?
They won't bury you unless you get that piece of paper.
Okay.
But anyway, there's a certificate. There's some exceptions, like if you die in military conflict, those go someplace else. But for everybody, essentially, there's a death record there. So I started with the births, and I found, some really interesting stuff that you'd never would have found out without looking at the records. And when I started doing mortality surveillance, actually it goes back to one of my clinical years. Everybody, basically, you see on the wards, had the same damn thing. These cardiovascular disease or cancer, and you saw the same thing over and over again.
Let's describe, you called them diseases of civilization. I've had another guest talk about the diseases of civilization, but you've mentioned heart disease and cancer. What else are you talking about?
And diabetes and pulmonary emphysema and all the things that take us to the doctors now. That's about all you see. And originally, it was communicable diseases before we learned how to put feces and urine in pipes and clean up drinking water. You know, we had enteric disease like mad. But you look at the death records now and the causes of death, except for accidents, it's all what I call diseases of civilization. And now we're getting to the immune diseases there. And suicide's another one. I mean, who would have thought suicide is a disease? It's an electrical disease, but the evidence is overwhelming. So that's what I mean by the diseases of civilization.
Right.
And the other reason I came to it was just looking historically back at the records and the time trend of electrification. They just follow chapter and verse. In fact, it's still present today. You don't see the major leukemia of childhood in places without the grid, without electricity, without electrical exposure. You don't see it in sub-Saharan Africa. You don't see it in parts of India that don't have the grid. And I mean, that's impressive. And the other thing that really sticks in my mind, and I can't get people to follow up on it, is right living with us side by side, well, maybe not side by side, but close, are the Amish, especially the Old Order Amish. They shun electricity for religious reasons. And if you look at their pattern of mortality and morbidity, it's just black and white different than ours. And what it looks like is what we were before we electrified at the turn of the century. Like right now, you don't see any ADHD or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in our kids, no asthma. You don't see any Alzheimer's in the adults. Their diabetes rates are fantastically low, like 30%, so are their blood sugars. And their cancer rates are trivial compared to ours. And there's been some good registry studies looking at Amish versus non-Amish. People don't pay attention to that. That's why I think that EMF is basically responsible for everything.
I mean, the problem, I mean, a lot of other people have tried to explain the better health of the Amish, and some people say it's lack of vaccines because they don't get vaccinated. They probably don't take very many pharmaceuticals. They may not use very many modern chemicals. I don't know if they use pesticides and fertilizers on their farms. I doubt it. So they're also not exposed to a lot of chemicals as well. So how do you separate out?
It's not the chemicals. This stuff started before almost all this stuff was invented. If you look at the turn of the century, 1900, the population of most of the cities in the world, the big cities, had electricity, and already they were showing the so-called diseases of civilization in huge, startling comparison to rural areas that didn't have electricity. If you compare upstate New York, where there was no electricity, and the farms, to New York City at the turn of the century, the differences in mortality were like an order of twice to three times different, higher in the cities, of course. Mm-hmm. And then as the rural areas got electrified, they caught up. Excuse me, I got to make a cough. Hold on.
It's okay. Let's go through the history of electrification in the United States. Like, when did Edison and all those people start to do the early experiments, but when they actually started to produce products that could be used?
The Pearl Street Station was the first major generating station in the world. It was, I think, 1882, and it was a DC system. He had these six big generators called Berthas. There's one still mm-hmm. left at the Edison Institute in Detroit. No, at Ford Institute, Dearborn. And the others fell through the floor and had a big fire. Then Tesla came along. But by 1900, the cities had AC power, alternating current. And, there was a big fight between AC and DC. And mm-hmm. they electrocuted elephants and did all sorts of other stupid things to show
which one was
safer than the other or more dangerous. But anyway, if you look at the turn of the century, people in New York City, their average life expectancy for men was 44 years. For women, it was 46 years. For Amish, we're living 70. Right there and then.
Mm-hmm.
You see this huge difference.
Then.
I mean, 30 years difference in life expectancy is amazing. It's enormous.
Right.
And the other thing that people lose sight of is where everybody's agog about microwave exposure. Well, hell, microwaves were invented right before World War II. Radar, mm-hmm. the first mm-hmm. appliances in the house, microwaves were called radar ranges. Well, all this stuff I published and wrote extensively about it. If you look at the 1920, 1930, 1940 censuses, when we had a count of residential electrification by residents, you know, percent of residences that were hooked to the grid, it tracks everything that happened in terms of the cancers, all the cancers essentially, including lung cancer, and the one that really sticks in my mind is suicide. And there's another one, disease of civilization. And if you know the symptomatology of electrical exposure, one of the things that happens is depression, and that's just the bottom of the iceberg, the tip of which is suicide.
Well, I just want to go back to the 1880s. Like I've also interviewed. Talked to a man named Jim West who looked at the polio epidemics, which he blames on pesticide exposure. And he made the point that in the 1880s, the first pesticide sprayers were being produced so that people had a way to apply pesticides on fields in large quantities.
Yeah, but in the 1880s, the pesticides that they were applying were basically arsenicals. I mean,
right.
I know the history of pesticide exposure. DDT was invented way after that.
Right. I was going to say that at about the time that the microwaves were being invented, so were the chlorinated chemicals, and after World War II is when DDT started to be used by the public as opposed to the military. I don't know how you separate out, you know, electricity from all the other things that were happening, because so many things were happening at the same time.
Yeah, but see, but worldwide they didn't happen at the same time. The urban-rural differences. I've got a paper. If you dig through, I think mm-hmm. I reference it. And I got some pictures of it in my book. I've got a paper where I actually looked at the 1940s census of electrification versus mortality in this country, and in the rural areas where they had farms and pesticide exposure, basically arsenicals on grapes and stuff, their mortality was a quarter or a third of what it is in urban areas where they had electricity. And it's state by state. It's not just one state. If you look at the time trend, say for Mississippi or Alabama or Georgia, where they didn't catch up. Well, actually, the farms didn't catch up to the cities until 1955. You had half a century with two huge populations in this country, both covered by death records, where one had electric exposure, the other didn't. That's when I really just bought into this 100%.
I mean, electrification of America was actually, I probably offend some people on the right of the political spectrum, but it was actually a socialist program. They subsidized electrification, just as they still subsidize the availability of telephones and internet devices in rural areas.
Yeah, I've gone through the TVA history, and because in the southern states, I looked at areas that had the plans, Tennessee Valley Authority plans, and compared county by county with places that didn't have it. And as soon as they get electrified, everything goes south. And in terms of morbidity,
it's still.
You know, it's happening to the Amish now. Our last trip I made to Wisconsin, mm-hmm. Dave Stetzer, who is my colleague, he took me to some farms where the cows were getting sick, and what they were getting sick from was ground current. And then he made some measurements in the house because the Amish, who weren't connected to the grid at all, were getting sick from this ground current that runs all over the countryside, was killing their cows.
Where's the ground current coming from?
Well, it's coming from the fact that the grid in North America, for the most part, is grounded WYE. And what it does at every transformer, those great cans you see on the power poles, there's a wire running, connecting the neutral to the earth. It's allegedly for lightning protection. But when computers came in, whenever they came in, what happened was house fires and building fires started happening because the computers and other solid-state devices are not linear loads like the old electric light bulbs. CFLs are bad too.
Right.
These things, what they do is they put a lot of high frequency. All electricity that comes to your place has to go back. Like every computer in the country has got a switching power supply in it because all transmitters and computers and junk like this runs on DC. So these switching power supplies interrupt the current, and they put a high-frequency crap into the neutral, which has to go back to the substation. Okay, it goes into your ground, it goes up to the pole, onto neutral. What happened when the computers and these non-linear loads started coming in, the high frequencies don't like to travel in wires as well as low frequencies, like 60 cycle.
Right.
So the wires started burning. It's called the skin effect. They run on the outside of the wire. So you need a thicker wire, a heavier wire with more capacity to carry this dirty electricity, which I write about, compared to 60 cycle. And first of all, they changed the building codes right away to demand and legislate that you have thicker neutrals in the buildings. But the utilities, in their infinite greed, didn't up or increase the capacity on the poles. So what happens is the down grounds at the transformers are now hot. They're running the stuff into the ground. And the dairy farmers were the first people to pick it up because the cows are on the ground and the stuff's running on the pasture and into the barns. And they react to it. And Stetzer and Hellman and others have...
And what is in the ground? I mean, that's electrons?
No. What happens is the initial electrical systems in rural areas are still something like this. It's called a single wire earth return system. If you run all the electricity to a house or to a load in a wire,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have any return, it'll run back through the ground just as sure as hell. It gets right back to the substation at 186,000 feet a second. I mean, at like the speed of light, or miles a second. Electricity travels.
I mean, you're basically pouring electrons into the ground out
of that
wire.
We're pouring electricity into the ground, so I measured, like right here at my house out in rural Olympia, Washington, there's 5 volts of garbage going in the ground. I've got waveforms for it. And one of the consequences of that is that people who, there's some therapeutic devices around, there's a book called Earthing, and they sell blankets that people can hook to the either the outlet ground in the house or the earth ground, which is the same, allegedly to discharge their bad electricity. But what it does, it brings the bad stuff into them. A lot of people get sick from those things. And that's what makes the cows sick. That's what makes people.
But how do you, I mean, if all the cows in America are exposed to electricity and some cows get sick, how do you know that those cows were sick from electricity and not from something else?
Stetzer's done that paper. He actually parses out which frequencies and which waveforms do it. And if you have a place where, and look at peak-to-peak frequency, the strength of the signal, the waveform is critical, but he's got a paper with Hellman published a couple of years ago that's just a classic. They studied thousands of cows for many years, and they actually measured the floor of the barn. And what's happening now is there's a trend and tendency now for the old motors used to have, just an on-off switch or a 1 or 2 speed switch. Now they're putting variable frequency drives on motors of all sizes everywhere. Those things chop up the current, and they told me about a farmer who bought a new washing machine. They wash all the, they have a lot of stuff to wash in dairy barns, and this one had like a 3-horse motor with a variable frequency drive on it. Made all his cows sick, like in a day. And now he's got many, many dairy operations in the Midwest with their own oscilloscope. So when the milk production goes down, they look at the scope and see what's going on.
So
and another tendency is they put new lights in, and a lot of the new lights are really bad.
LED lights or
some of those are horrible.
In terms of
dirty electricity.
Dirty electricity. I was told by somebody years ago who was trying to persuade me to invest in a windmill, that windmills actually clean up the electricity in the grid. I mean, is that
boy, is that a joke? Let me explain windmills and solar here. They're so-called green energies. They're fine as long as most of them generate DC.
Right.
And if you can run your solar generates DC, period. Now, windmills, you can fix them so they generate either AC or DC. But the rub with those two technologies is if you're tied to the grid, they have to change what they generate to be in sync with the grid. They have grid-tied inverters, they're called. Inverters just chop up the current. I've yet to see a house or a commercial solar operation that was clean. They're horrible. They make super dirty electricity, and variable frequency drives are going everywhere. We just had an epidemic of eye cancer in kids in North Carolina. We examined them last fall, and we found out that it was almost certainly caused by a big natural gas pumping station about a mile from the school that had multi-horse, like 300 horsepower motors to keep the stuff refrigerated with VFDs on them.
So what you're saying is some electricity is worse than others, or some
absolutely.
Is bad and some is not.
Absolutely.
And you're saying that the higher power in the more solid state, the dirtier, in quotes, the electricity is.
Well, you could check for this in your own house. Take an AM radio and tune it off station and turn your microwave on and get near it and see what happens. It'll and what it's doing, it's putting out bad radio frequency, and your radio is a good RF receiver, and it's picking up the garbage. When you drive around in the city, put your car radio or truck radio on AM, off station, and every time you go underneath the power line or you go by an RF source, it's going to howl, and you'd be surprised where you find this stuff, and a lot of time these transmitters are clandestine, they're hidden. No, but the old 60 cycle probably gets you, but not like this new stuff. you look at it on an oscilloscope, it's full of high-frequency spikes. And you know it's biologically active. They heal bone fractures with pulsed really low-frequency fields. They put these little battery-operated gizmos on the fracture, and it makes the cells divide to heal your fracture quicker.
Right, but I mean, we're... I mean, compared to when I was a child in the 1950s, we're just bathed in electricity and EMF. Both from way more electricity is being used now than it was back then, and also we've got many more devices, and most of them these days are solid state, stereo, cell phones, whatever.
They're all dirty.
But I mean, are we experiencing a massive increase? You know, which diseases are we seeing a massive increase in?
Yeah, well, the one I started with was leukemia. Mm-hmm. I found an epidemic of it back in the 40s and when I was working in New York State. You know, I'm old. I'm in my mid-early 80s. And I was, you know, a young buck then. And I did studied a cluster of childhood leukemia in Rome, New York. And, God, when I was there, I had no idea what was going on. And in retrospect, 30 years later, when Smigelski published a study about radar workers and military RF workers having leukemias and lymphomas, I said, oh, my God, I remember that Rome had this big radar array. I could see it in most of the houses that were... It's gone now. It's an industrial park. But so I missed the cause then. But you look at the epidemiology of childhood leukemia, that there's clusters of it near high-powered military antennas in Hawaii and other places.
Right.
And like I say, you still don't see common acute lymphoblastic leukemia in sub-Saharan Africa and other places like that.
Right, I understand that, but I mean, the military is also notorious for using a lot of toxic chemicals. I mean, the Hanford military base is like a nuclear disaster.
Yeah, I studied Hanford, I studied the nukes, I studied the radioiodine releases. It ain't the chemicals. I mean, the guys who work with the chemicals, I did occupational mortality before I got into any of this, and I still do it. They're standing in it. They're exposed to the stuff. They get horrendous levels of it. It causes some diseases, but why, for example, would office workers and professional people have much, much higher levels of melanoma and all these cancers than the guys who work with the stuff in the factory, the chemists? And they do. I mean, breast cancer is epidemic in office workers and in secretaries and clerks. In the old days, electric typewriters were hot, but now offices are hot. I mean, the high rises, they all have computers. They all got copy machines, which are dirty. They got compact fluorescent lights. They've got, you know. what I've come across lately, you know, I think we've been measuring the wrong things for 40 years. I finally got a paper out on it. We were measuring power frequency magnetic fields. That was the primary thing we measured with Gauss meters, and the industry made Gauss meters. The first clue that we were measuring the wrong thing happened when there was a big occupational study done in Hydro-Quebec by Hydro-Quebec, and they devised a meter called a positron and measured the high frequency stuff, and they got horrendous excess mortality when they looked at the high frequencies compared to the 60 cycle stuff.
What do you mean by they got higher mortality?
Higher mortality rates from all sorts of stuff, like lung cancer, of all things.
But how did they connect a person with lung cancer with these higher frequencies?
They calculated, observed, and expected based on the populations, and observed in that case was 15 times expected, almost like if you smoke 3 packs a day, and they had adjusted for cigarette smoking because they had that history.
Right.
And why are you seeing lung cancer in non-smokers and in females going up like mad? I mean, it used to be strictly a smoker's disease.
Yeah, I mean, I've always kind of dismissed the EMF thing because I'm really focused on chemicals. Like, I had a guest recently, well, maybe a year ago, who talked about aspartame, which was approved in the early 1980s, which, of course, the first personal computer came out about the same time. There's a very high correlation between aspartame and the same diseases you're talking about, heart disease, diabetes, ALS, things like that. But also there would be a correlation with the number of personal computers that were in use as well.
Yeah, okay, look, you mentioned ALS. Mm-hmm. You go back and look at that. They've reported epidemics of it in soccer players in Europe, and it's named after Lou Gehrig, Lou Gehrig's disease. Well, the Yankees trainers used shortwave diathermy to treat their ailments, and there's five guys from the San Francisco 49ers, same team that got it, four or five, which is just off scale, and they had the same kinds of exposure, and it's more common in people with electric shocks, people who've been struck by lightning. It's ALS for certain is an EMF disease, and you talk about the chemicals. The other real clue about EMF being important is every time we have a recession in this country and worldwide, when the mortality rates get better, longevity increases. What happens when you get a recession, if you look at electrical generation, it goes way down because most of the industry is turned, the wheels of industry are turned by motors, which are use electricity.
Right.
And in World War II, when the lowlands got invaded by the Germans, they got healthier. People thought it was due to a caloric effect. They were starving. Uh-uh. You look at Cuba, same thing. When the Russians pulled out, they all got healthier because the electricity use and generation went way the hell down. It's beautiful. It's tongue, you know, and every time the 10 recessions I looked at over the since the 1800s, and every time you get a recession, longevity goes up, but mortality goes down. And you can see it's targeted into places that suffer most from recessions, like urban areas. Out in the sticks, they're not as affected in rural areas because they don't have the voters and they don't have the exposures.
presumably in recessions, like agricultural, people still need to eat, so
maybe agriculture. Exactly, they eat, they may grow their own, but people have to eat. In Cuba, I looked at that. I published all this stuff. Go through my
right.
my visa.
Yeah, you've published a lot of stuff. I don't have the statistics at my fingertips to kind of evaluate these connections, but I mean the problem I have is so many things are correlated. Electricity is often produced by coal, so
yeah.
If you produce more electricity, you're going to burn more coal, which puts a lot of noxious stuff into the atmosphere.
Yeah, but look at all, you know, I just did a paper on showing that much of the stuff, obesity and diabetes and high blood sugars, there's good data now. People have been collecting the stuff and punching it in cards and putting on computer tapes for years. I saw some data looking at these indicators of but malhealth, like high blood sugars and body mass index, which is an indication of obesity, by places. And those high places are a little islands. They don't use coal. They get their generation by trucking and diesel fuel, and they got these dirty diesel generators. And
right.
I'm certain that's why the suicide rates are high in Afghanistan and Iraq, but only in those people who get air conditioned because they barge in these big peel stick generators. And
In Canada, we have a huge epidemic of diabetes amongst Native peoples. I don't know if Native Americans in the United States have the same thing. And there was recently an experiment where they put them on a diet which was much closer to their traditional diet. And a lot of people had their diabetes reverse. I don't think Indian reserves in Canada are places that particularly use a lot of electricity. So.
They're off grid, most of them. I mean, look at Alaska and coastal Canada. They got mountains and fjords. They can't run power lines, so they barge diesel oil in. And I've been in like Yakutat and other U.S. communities up there, they all had their own generation stations. So obesity and high blood pressure and diabetes are preferentially seen in places that have crappy electricity from the
But if that was the case, you know, putting people on a high-protein, low-carbohydrate diet wouldn't reverse the effects. Like, why does that...
It'll reverse the effects even in the worst situations. Look, at diet varies. Lifestyle varies across populations and across the world. This mortality business, the technologies that saturated the world and are present everywhere, are two big technologies in the last last couple of centuries, that the internal combustion engine, cars, and electricity, those two things, and those are the things that are, I mean, they eat different sort of diets in China and Asia, and in the South Pacific, they had fish diets. They didn't get in trouble with this stuff until, and their diet changed 40, 50, they went to World War II, and a lot of these places didn't get electricity until another 30 years later. When they got the electricity, they got the problems. So the timing fits perfectly with, and again, I've done enough chemical studies, and I know I've studied occupational disease and worker populations, and I was always aghast that, that office workers and professional people, I mean, they get the lion's share of all this stuff. They're educated, better diet, better health care, and more cancer. Why is that, you know?
In offices, they you're right, people have better diet because they're wealthier people. Have a better income, they have all those things, but there's a lot of chemicals that are used in offices, duplicating machines before the photocopier and even photocopiers. There's a lot of stuff in the air apart from electricity. So how do you distinguish between the two things?
Well, I did a study, and I published it, about an epidemic of cancer. One of those school teachers have epidemics of a number of cancers. The California Teachers Association looked at all of the California teachers for 15 years, and they have about 10 cancers that are way too high. They just looked at the cancers, not the other stuff. But we got into a school and showed that what was the major variable was we measured the classrooms for dirty electricity with Stetscher's meter, and we showed that correlated almost perfectly with. And then the hot rooms with their DE, dirty electricity, were the ones that had the cancers. And they're all exposed to it. They eat the same lunchroom and the same chemical exposures. And they teach different courses at different, you know, but they're all teachers. And it's not just that school, it's all the schools. The other thing I noticed in California is most of the houses in the Southern California where I lived are built on slabs. And I wanted to get into this new measurement. I think we were measuring the wrong things. We measured magnetic fields and electric fields. Now, before he died, Marty Graham, who was my benefactor, he and Stetscher kind of invented this whole area, showing that the high-frequency transients were making the cow sick and killing us. He sent me a meter. It was an off-the-shelf Fluke meter that could measure amperage, current in your body. And what I do is you take one lead and you put it on an EKG patch on my chest. I had to shave a chunk of my chest because I got too much hair. And then the other one you put into the ground, and you can actually measure as you walk around or in a given place the current that's in your body. So I think the fields are only important if they can get into your body and make currents. So we finally gotten to the point where I think we're measuring the right thing. And I showed that in many places where the magnetic fields are perfectly normal, like in my bathroom, the major cause of the exposures in my bathroom put currents in my body and standard fluorescent lights, which have everywhere. I spent 3 hours in a lighting store last year, and I measured every lamp in the place. With two or three exceptions, they all put horrendous currents in my body. I can show you places in Olympia, like at the public market, where just standing there, a clerk is getting 300 microamps of current in his body when the feds and the industry, IARC and I'm trying to think of the Cabot and those people who work for Electric Power Research Institute, who published contact current stuff years and years ago, and they showed that 18 microamps is enough to give you cancer on a chronic basis. Well, I can show you. My barbershop has got 80. My bathroom, when the lights are on,
shouldn't we all be dying of cancer? I mean, we're all bathed in this EMF. Stuff, right? I mean, if it's not the electricity, it's the cell phone, it's the television, it's all around us. So
yeah.
There has been an increase in the diseases of civilization, but it correlates with so many different
yeah,
things.
But you know, I'm showing that my publications, the major ones, going to looking at the 20s and 30s, mm-hmm. Before there was a single microwave in the whole planet, and you could see the differences in mortality then. Plain as day. So let's, that rules out the microwave.
Has, So you say it rules out the microwave as being...
As a primary cause of this.
So you don't believe that microwaves are a primary
cause? Oh, no, I think they're horrible. But I'm just saying that before microwaves were invented, we could see the CMF effect from something in the grid, and we were getting the dirty electricity from the very time that they spun the first generators, because they had brush arcing. Edison bitched about it like mad in his work, because they were burning out the brushes. It cost a lot of money to change the damn things, and they're commutators. And if he had brush arcing, I could tell you that every time the brushes arced, they're putting dirty electricity pulses out to the grid from the very first time that thing generated electricity. And that's what I'm saying is the major cause of problems.
What do you think about chemicals in nutrition? I mean, if somebody works in a chlorinated chemical plant producing
they fed DDT workers to volunteers. They fed them pounds of the stuff, and they didn't see a whole lot. It does affect bird egg thickness, and that's why the falcons and the eagles had trouble for a while.
There are actually studies that show that DDT has a direct toxic effect. In many cases, like when pesticides are sprayed, they don't use pure pesticides, and the chemicals they use in a commercial pesticide, most of it is not the active ingredient, and it's the inert ingredients, which are trade secrets, which are often more toxic than the pesticide. So a pesticide can be relatively non-toxic, but that doesn't mean that when you spray it on the field, it's non-toxic, because they test
look
the pesticide.
I did these occupational studies. You can go online. There's a Washington State default website that's got every death in the state coded to occupation for 50, 60 years, cause an occupation. You look at the farmers and the people who are use a lot of it, and the spray pilots and pesticide workers. Yeah, their mortality is pretty par for the course, and most farmers, except for certain causes, are low. I mean, the people that stand out are the professional, technical people, and the electrical workers, and the office workers. And
with the diseases of civilization, because there are
correlations. Well, that's all there is, basically.
Well, there's correlations between between cancer and, say, 245D or 2,4-D or 2,4-5-T.
Oh, hey, correlations are... I mean, they're just, compared to the EMF correlations, those are weak. I mean, I'm a chemist. I know all this stuff. I worked in the chem lab for 100 years.
Right. I guess I'm just saying, like, how would you tell about my EMF exposure? I've lived in different cities, different houses, worked in different places. I mean, if I get cancer tomorrow, how are you going to pin it on?
Well, it's hard to say what caused it specifically, but I've studied people who, are occupation. Well, microwave news carriers. There's a big study just published a week ago. They exposed rats to a known carcinogen, X-rays, and then they did EMF exposures and showed that it's the EMFs are a huge promoter. And it's the first time, and they did lifetime studies, in the rats And that's, we're publishing this stuff.
Where was this published?
This is published, just go to Microwave News. Lewis Lesson's got a big article about it. It's published by Safridi and that bunch at the International Agency for Cancer Research. They did a big multi-year study of, a lifetime study of rats, and they looked at, they got a whole bunch of cancers, but they got a schwannoma of the heart. Schwannoma is the same kind of cancer you get auditory nerve from cell phone exposure. But you think that's a coincidence, but I think it's an interesting one. But anyway, that's the first whole animal correlation that EMFs are. They use magnetic fields for the exposure, are promoters. But the animals.
After X-ray exposure.
The FDA, so they expose them to carcinogen and they see what it would affect this other stuff had.
So they're saying EMF accelerated the development of cancer.
They call it a promoter, and they think it's cancer's a two-hit thing. So one thing gets you, the other thing's got to get you too.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was in love with the chemical stuff for many, many years, and then it just having studied people, you know, who work in horrendous exposures, like dye stuff workers. Yeah, they get bladder cancer from phenylbetanaphthalamine. But, you know, most people get bladder cancer from the cigarettes they smoke because there's all sorts of nasty things that get excreted in the urine. And,
so you're not saying...
I'm not saying the chemicals are good. Let's face it, the cleaner your food, the cleaner your environment, and are the better. But you look at populations that live in filthy smog areas, their mortality is a whole lot different than people who live in pristine areas. But the big divider seems to be whether they ready kilowatts get and whether they're exposed to the grid. And to just go back and read my book. I
mean, yeah, I'll read it and interview you again. I noticed you'd done a study on flour mill workers. What did you find with that study?
That's so long ago. I think I found a sex ratio difference in the progeny, and I thought it had to do with some of they treat the mill, the flour, with pesticides to keep the rats and stuff out.
Right.
And I think that one of the pesticides they used had been shown in other situations to cause infertility. And a lot of times you see sex ratio differences when you get differential mortality in the fetuses. That's
right.
What I remember.
Yeah.
That's about 40 years.
Oh, okay. That's a long time ago. Okay, you'd also mentioned steel-belted radial tires.
Yeah, well, when I first got my first magnetic field meter, I made the mistake of turning it on in the car. Holy Christ, I couldn't believe the fields. And I know I was driving down the road. I said, where's this coming from? Because it wasn't under power lines or anything. And so I stopped the car, shut it off, and the fields went away. And then the minute I started moving, I got suspicious of the tires because the fields were higher if I put the meter down by the left front wheel because I was driving, see. And then I had the wife get in the car with the meter, and we drove down the road, and she sat in the back seat. Over the tires, the fields were higher. So then I took a good hard look at the tires and with just a compass, and you run a compass across the tread.
Right.
And what you see is the needle jumps all over the place. And then
right.
In the paper I wrote about it, I took a piece of a tire and I cut it with a skill saw and I stretched it out and I put paper on it and I sprinkled iron filings on it, and you could see little magnetic domains, and they come from the fact that there's like 3 miles of wire in the tire and it's magnetic. And
the rotation generates electricity, basically.
Yeah, it's how you generate electricity, you know?
Right, I guess it is a generator in some kinds of, in a way.
When I was doing those studies, I made another staggering discovery. I was at a tire bouncing. Well, I went into a tire store in Le Schwab here in Olympia, and I took my compass and I walked down the rows, and damn, I found a tire that didn't make a jump. I said, what's this tire? Well, it's the old fiberglass belted radios, you know, no wire, so it didn't have any fields. And then I was at a tire bouncing machine, and I borrowed a MDEX meter, which is a $2,000 meter, state-of-the-art magnetic field meter, and I had my old FW Bell cheap meter side by side. My cheap meter was reading off scale when the tire spun, and the MDEX wasn't reading anything. It turns out to be a bandwidth problem. The MDEX is just targeted at 60 cycles, and these fields are way below that, like 10, 20, 30, and depending on rotational speed and tire size.
And do you know today? I mean, I don't follow tire technology too much. I go in once a year to get my tires.
You can't
tires
buy
cast.
A non-steel belted radial tire.
They haven't gone to things like Kevlar or anything like that?
Nuh-uh.
So
they
basically
went from fiberglass and those non-metal strength, but there's nothing like steel wire.
So basically,
I wrote to the companies and said, "Hey, look at all you got to do is use non-magnetic wire." They just ignored me or blew me off. You can get rid of the fields with with a strong magnet, but it's a pain in the butt. I mean, and you could build this technology into the every time your tires get balanced, you can get rid of it. But, you know, and I think that's why left foot cancers are higher in this country, because and their right foot cancers are higher in Australia.
interesting to see those correlations.
Yeah.
So, but basically, everybody who's driving a car or riding in a car is sitting next to an extra electricity generator in the form of
And over the back seat, the baby in the back seat's getting the highest exposures in the car. And an hour in a car is getting like 24 hours of what he gets in the house. But you know, in the cars, the latest cars I've measured, the electric cars and some of the hybrids, oh my God, the RF is just off scale. And I'm measuring body amperage. And the other thing, that they're putting radar in a lot of cars, so you're driving down the road, the car in front of you is going to be, you know, looking for collision avoidance. That's done with radar, you know.
Right, and, right.
And a lot of these cars, I mean, a lot of them stall when they get into heavy EMF environments because they're technologically, I mean, they're great cars, and they're safer in terms of accident collision. But boy, I think I measure, if I'm going to buy a new car, I'm going to spend a lot of time measuring what's going on with it. And I don't want this OnStar Wi-Fi stuff in the car, and I want hands off. And people use their cell phones in cars, which is dumb because the stuff bounces off the car frame, and it has to be a stronger signal because it's in a car environment instead of outside.
I think a big problem with cell phones in cars is that they distract you and cause accidents.
Oh, yeah,
right. Well.
That's a real, real problem. Texting and...
Texting and driving is definitely...
Yeah, I think cell phones are a hell of a sociological problem. I go to airports and now nobody's talking to each other, just sitting there staring at their phones. Same on planes. And I don't know. And the kids can't write anymore because they text all the time. Whatever.
I think kids are in some ways more literate, but you're right when it comes to handwriting.
I think they're more isolated, too. And we used to play ball and have friends and everybody. I mean, they communicate with these things, and they're not face-to-face talking to each other anymore.
I agree. I mean, kids used to get thrown outside, go play down by the stream, but nowadays there probably isn't a stream. And if you leave your kid outside, you might get arrested because it's child endangerment.
A lot of places aren't as safe as they used to be. Yeah, but anyway, I got anything else you want to chew about? I mean, I've spent, you know, 50 years trying to figure out what's killing us, and I'm persuaded that it's not the chemicals. I mean, clean is better than dirty. It just goes without saying. But and there are certain places where there are populations exposed that are damaging the whole population, like the asbestos situation. Whole communities have problems. The tar sands up in Canada are probably causing problems to the downstream tribes. But by and large, I think the major drivers of morbidity and mortality are EMFs, especially the high frequencies. High frequencies and high intensities.
I'm thinking of like the Zika virus and what's different in Brazil now than it would have been 100 years ago. Well, they're putting an insecticide in the water.
Yeah.
They're spraying insecticides on the fields.
Yeah.
They are vaccinating pregnant women. And there's probably a whole lot more electricity being used because everybody in Brazil probably has a cell phone, and a lot of people have televisions and refrigerators and air conditioners and all that kind of stuff. So it's all kind of mixed together.
I think good epidemiology will sort it out ultimately, but that's what I've been trying to do forever. I've studied some worker populations and the ALS stuff, I think, is just dramatic. But we in this North Carolina epidemic, there were three young women who went to the same school who wound up with ocular melanoma.
That is two of them. Extraordinarily rare. I mean,
extraordinarily rare tumor. There's like 15 cases in that community, not just in the kids, but in a woman that lived about a quarter mile from that, 300 yards from the school, and in people who lived 4 or 5 miles away. And what we actually measured currents in the ground and got exactly the same waveform near the school, at the school. They wouldn't let us in, so we measured the down ground and we measured the earth over the gas pipeline, and we showed exactly the same fingerprint. There's no way on earth it could get that by chance.
And there were no particular chemical exposures?
No. We know where it's coming from. We know how to fix it. But, of course, the utility and the schools, they're in a big state of denial. Like the La Quinta school I studied, that's just black and white. I couldn't get anybody to do anything. And now what's sad is the kids are dropping like flies from the same damn cancers the teachers were getting with only 3 years of exposure in the middle school.
And where was the school?
La Quinta, California. It's like La Quinta Middle School. That's the one where we showed dirty electricity is measured in the classrooms, predicted the mortality of the cancer incidence. It was an incidence study.
Yeah.
The teachers.
I'll have to.
I think I got a chapter in my book about that.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. It's outside. I mean, I normally am very focused on people's chemical exposures, nutrition.
Yeah, I started.
Like
I started out. The chemicals were the big bugaboo, but as I got doing this stuff and working with occupational files and populations, and I studied the Asarco place. And I studied people exposed to coal tar pitch volatiles and other occupations, and then I realized, hey, the damn secretaries have got more mortality than the guys out there shoveling this stuff. They were getting nasal septal perforations and getting some lung cancer, but that was it. And the clerical people were, and the high-end people were the ones who were getting the cancers. And then I found, in some of these universities, I found that profs sitting in the same chair, died of the same thing. And you looked at what was under the chair, and that was where the main power cable to the whole school was, And that catches your attention. Read some of my...
Yeah.
Hey, my stuff is online and my website. You can look up.
What is
about
your
eight or nine recent publications?
Yeah. What is your website?
Just go to Google and put in Sam Melham Dirty Electricity. And
okay.
Website will pop up and you can read the ALS papers. You can read the recession papers. You can read all the supporting stuff. Some of the early stuff too.
Right.
Okay.
Well, hopefully some of my listeners will do that, and I'd like to thank you for joining me today, Sam. Thanks, Sam. Okay. Goodbye.
You're sure welcome. Bye-bye.
All Republican candidates, except possibly Kasich, have spoken in favor of torture, especially Donald Trump, and even Mitt Romney, who criticized him, ignoring the fact that support for torture was pretty much universal amongst his own crop of candidates this year. Even Mitt Romney has previously spoken in favor of waterboarding, which is torture. John McCain, who was tortured by the Viet Cong, is one of the few Republicans who's been steadfastly opposed. I suppose he'd know. As for Democrats, well, Obama's refused to prosecute anyone for torture, which is a guarantee it will happen again. And it probably is still happening, both in military and intelligence settings, and in prisons, where some of the ex-soldiers learned torture techniques while in the military. But what about human subject research? We know that research by the Nazis and Japanese during World War II was torture, and that people suffered immense pain and sometimes died during these experiments. What about now? Why is the United States Human Health Services trying to change the rules? According to Jeffrey K., PhD, who runs a blog on this issue, Human and Health Services has asked for public responses to changes proposed in law regarding federal policy for the protection of human subjects, also known as the, quote, common rule. The proposed exceptions will relate to intelligence surveillance and criminal justice activities, and also the weakening of protections related to research on prisoners, presumably criminal prisoners. Currently, the Department of Justice, the CIA, the Department of Homeland Security, the High Value Detainee Interrogation Group, and the intelligence agencies operating under the Department of Defense are all regulated by the so-called common rule. There's good reason historically for this, as government agencies, often under the auspices of national security, failed to protect human beings who were harmed significantly under experiments by these agencies. They act under a veil of secrecy and safeguards on potential misuse of actions that they call research should be strengthened, not weakened, in the opinion of Kay. He quotes Jay Katz in 1994, reviewing the history of human experimentation. In my review on the regulations on the conduct of research, I have tried to demonstrate that medical science's commitment to individual autonomy continues to remain ambiguous. The call for balancing the need to advance science for mankind's benefit and to protect the inviolability of subjects of research all too commonly tilts in favor of progress. I actually disagree a little bit with Katz there, because I believe that the science that this produces is generally not good, so it's not really progress. Jeffrey Kay and also Jason Leopold, who's a famous freedom of information journalist, in 2010 wrote an investigatory report which in part stated, in January 2004, the Director of Defense Research and Engineering initiated a review of human subject protection policies. There was a Navy slide presentation in 2006 that stated, that they described as framing the problem in the light of the history of U.S. government's noncompliance with human subjects research protections, including U.S. government mind control experiments using LSD, MKUltra, MKDelta, which ran from the 50s to the 70s, a 90-day national stand-down in 2003 for all human subject research and development activities, which was ordered in response to the death of research subjects, as well as the use of unqualified researchers. This presentation even found that the Navy itself was not in full compliance with current federal policies on human subject protections. They had no single point of accountability for human subject protections. So what's my opinion? As I have said, secret science is bad science. The results cannot be properly reproduced and may very well just be a sly form of torture, a way of disguising torture, just as prisoners are sometimes given drugs they don't need just because the guards, or more likely the management, know that the side effects are torturous. And as for scientists and medical professionals who participate in this research or monitor the torture, they're criminals and traitors to the use of science to making the world a better place. One of the other negative aspects of modern medicine is the fact that testimony can be used to send people to jail, to ruin their lives, that later turns out to be completely false. In Canada, a woman was just exonerated for the death of her stepdaughter, which occurred 25 years ago. She was implicated by a now disgraced pathologist, Dr. Charles Smith, who put many people in jail. And many of his convictions, or the convictions that were based on his evidence, are now being reconsidered. Many of his convictions have been overturned. Even the prosecution agreed that her guilty plea should be struck down. Had everyone known what they know now, the plea would never have been entered. She pled guilty because she was told that she would get a lesser sentence. The fresh medical evidence, says the prosecution, shows that Dr. Smith's evidence, which formed the foundation of the guilty plea, was fundamentally flawed. The little child, Cassandra Shepherd of Ontario, had been through a period of health problems, began vomiting, and became unresponsive in April of 1991. She died two days later in hospital. No word on whether she was recently vaccinated or had any other medical procedures, pharmaceutical drugs, or surgery. The woman, Maria Shepherd, says that on the first day of the preliminary hearing, when Dr. Smith walked into court, it was like a superhero had entered the room. Everybody believed every word that he said. Nobody dared question him. Her family doctor, who had said the bruises could have been the result of a blood disorder, was actually facing prosecution themselves, but luckily that case was thrown out. The only amazing thing about this, I think, is that Maria Shepherd is still, all these years later, married to Cassandra's father, the father of the child who died, who was not Maria's blood daughter. I guess that's the best thing that could have come out of this, because often families fall apart under these circumstances. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Infectious Myth.